I'm Lyle Troxell, and you're listening to Geek Speak, an episode of just me talking about a few things, the iPhone Max, and why I like it, a couple things about Adobe suites of applications, and a bit about podcasting and talking too quickly. This program actually is traditionally done with a couple people at least, a couple geeks, chatting about the news and other things we find compelling. Sometimes the most important and interesting conversations happen outside the context of the news and technology in general, but about what our lives are about. I have not done an episode for a while, and I felt like it was time to do one. I'm just going to talk about a couple things that's going on. I have the new iPhone. You've probably heard about it already. We've actually talked about it on the show already, I believe, as well. And one of the things I'm noticing about using this phone is I went and switched to the large form factor. I used to use the Plus, but last year I switched to the X. And now I'm using the X Max. It's a big phone. I'm quite enjoying it. I'm enjoying the magnetic sticker I have on the back that also is on my dashboard of my car, a little magnetic sticker, so that I don't have to have a clamping thing hold it. I like that format, though. I can never find the right type of magnetic attachment to attach to the car. I had a ball that was stuck on with glue, and it fell off in the heat of the California sun. And then the one I have right now is kind of a clip that clips onto the exhaust ports of the air conditioning system, the heating system. And that's a little floppy, a little wobbly, and I like the more firm grasp. So one of the projects I've given myself is to make a mount that would probably be a blacksmithed thing, because I like to work with metal and hammers, to mount my phone using kind of a clamp on top of the dash. So I'm sure that that will emerge in the next 6 months or so as a solution to my problem of mounting. I'm using one of the leather cases by Apple. It's got an Apple logo on it, which I don't particularly like, but the thing that's nice about it is it's easy to pop on and off, and the little magnetic disc or the little metal disc that has ferric in it is inside the sheath, so I can pull it out easily. That does block it, though, from working effectively wireless charging. When you have a disc of metal in the back, you have a problem with wireless charging, so I still have to plug my phone in. I have been using an app called Waking Up, and it is by Sam Harris. He also has a podcast of the same name. He's an atheist and philosopher and pretty interesting guy. He's got a great podcast. I highly recommend Waking Up. And he's launched this meditation app. I think I'm on day 7 of this thing. I've been doing it probably for 2 weeks, so not religiously. 10 minutes guided meditation. And I found that when I'm doing it, I engage in the world a little differently. I've been noticing that I'm less responsive emotionally to experiences I'm seeing. I'm able to step back a little bit, which gives my time for my intellect to catch up with my conversational attributes. I'm a guy in his early 40s or mid 40s. I know how to manage my emotional state at some level, but meditation's actually given me another level of awareness of myself, which I've quite enjoyed. All right, I've got new Wi-Fi in my home. Years ago, I was turned on to Ubiquiti Networks, a wireless protocol thing by a friend of mine who was in the business of networking and such. And he said, you got to look at Ubiquiti. And Ubiquiti is a company that makes hardware and software that manage Wi-Fi networks. The antennas that were really intriguing to me at the time were these kind of outdoor long-distance antennas. You had to manage your network yourself. There was access points. And all of the software to manage it was a little hard to run and use, but the hardware was pretty great and not that expensive and kind of pro-level. So I've been running Ubiquiti for a long time. Last year, I moved into a new house. The Ubiquiti antennas that I had were really designed for being outside, but also the protocols were not the contemporary protocols. And I went ahead and bought one of their in-house ones as well, and I've been using that with these Ubiquiti antennas. But I kept on being intrigued by these other mesh network systems because not really the mesh network quality. I could, of course, manage that myself, but mostly because they were easy to manage via software. So I have 3 teenagers, and these teenagers have devices. They have phones, they have laptops, some tablets. And they'll get on them and use them at times of the night where I feel they probably should be sleeping. And because teenagers don't always have the best ability to manage their desires, they will watch TV until odd hours of the night. Not that I've ever had that problem. Anyway, I've been kind of intrigued by a few of these different mesh networks have been talked about on different podcasts and stuff, including Google's mesh network and the price point and so on. And I found out that Ubiquiti makes Amplify. And Amplify is a mesh network software package and hardware package, a three-unit system, which I bought and installed and have been using. And let me tell you, I love it, love it, love it. We actually had a whole show on that I'll put in the show notes for today's episode, on Ubiquiti's little micro router that allows you to set up VPN at home. It's kind of like a business-level router for like $100. It's really cool. And I still have that as my front end. You know, so my router comes into the house. I've got a cable modem. And then from there, it goes to my Ubiquiti switch router. And then from that goes to this new Ubiquiti Amplify system. So what Amplify is, you get a box. It's a cube about 6 inches by 6 inches by 6 inches. Yeah, that's how cubes work. And it sits on someplace public. And the cool thing about this thing is it has an LCD screen, a circular LCD screen, which tells you the time. So it's a clock. It also has a light on the bottom of the base. It looks like it's a glowing white light. And this is a Wi-Fi access point with four access points in the back of it, so you can plug it into other devices. So if it's in the center of your home, not so great if you want to plug in other things. We do have it actually right now in the kitchen area of our home. I don't have anything else plugged into it. Everything else is running off Wi-Fi from it. But I also have hardwired stuff, so I could actually put the TV on something else. In any case, I haven't decided the final format. Then there are these antennas that are just a power point. You plug it into an Edison plug and a little magnetic sphere and an antenna off the top of it. The magnetic sphere thing allows you to angle it and turn it and everything. And the way the little magnetic sphere is designed is there's two power points. So it just provides power to the actual access point, which sticks above it. The access point is probably 9 inches tall, and it's got some lights on it. So you pop these in two different parts of the house. They get Wi-Fi from the main unit, the little cube. And the thing that's so nice about it, really, especially having children, is that I can manage it via my phone. So I pop up my phone, I can see what devices exist on my network, I can see what is using network and bandwidth, I can name those things, they'll keep track of it, I can assign IPs to them if I want to have static IPs for them. I can also turn them off whenever I want. So the other night I was working in my shop, which is outside, and I noticed that the glow of the TV was still on in the house. My wife had already gone to sleep, my kids were watching some television, I looked down at the time, it's like 11. So I go in and say, hey guys, you know, it's time to turn this off. And go through the house and go back to the shop, and I'm working. And about 10, 15 minutes later, I look up, and the light of the TV is still glowing, and that means the kids are still awake. So I just pulled up my phone and turned the TV off. Turned the network to the TV off. And, of course, the Netflix show they were watching stopped. And a few minutes later, they were asleep. So I didn't have an argument with them. I didn't tell them again to go turn it off. I didn't go in there and get dogmatic and turn it off. I just made the system not work anymore. They might not have even known that I'd done that. It resulted in the effect I wanted. I've also showed the kids that I can do that, so it's not too creepy. But I can also group my kids' the phone devices and such into a network and just have it turn off at a certain period of time. So my kids' phones just stop having network at, I can't remember, the bedtime on school nights, which is great. The other thing that can happen is if they ask me for access, I can turn it on again. So some really nice features in that respect. All of this was doable with my own networking system, right? I could do that with the other kind of more challenging things to do, but I never did because it was harder to do. I recall a while ago that we needed to turn off the network because of this kind of kids watching too much TV, wanting to go to bed kind of thing, and I just unplugged the entire house, unplugged the modem. Anyway, having software in your pocket that manages your network, especially with teenagers, highly useful. And of course, troubleshooting and things of that nature are easier at this thing. And the actual cube that has the screen on the face of it, so cool. When you tap it, you can cycle through and see what the network status is and such. So pretty happy with all of those features, and paired with a really good router in the front of it so you can actually do your VPN and stuff of that nature. Not bad. Good job, Ubiquiti Networks for Amplify project. And by the way, it's like $350 or something like that for the kit. So it's not cheap, but it does replace your Wi-Fi. I've been an Adobe user for years. My friend Ken Laws, who, by the way, is moving back from LA up to the Santa Cruz area and is looking for work. So if you know of a need of an iOS developer remotely, I highly recommend giving me a shout out. You can find me. You can just email me, Lyle@geekspeak.org, or hit me up on Twitter. I'm Lyle on Twitter. It's a lot easier. In any case, Ken's looking for work right now, which is kind of cool to be able to promote a friend who I believe in. Any case, Ken years ago let me use his computer with Photoshop on it, and I was able to, I mean, early, I guess, 95 or something like that, we had an online magazine. We had like an online soap opera, photos and text, and I just did photo manipulation, you know, kind of took the storyline and did fun things like had a giant walk down in San Francisco area. So one of the actors I touched up so it looked like they were walking through as a giant. In any case, that kind of stuff in Photoshop. And so I learned those skills from him and from his system. And then for years later, I would do web development. I knew Photoshop from that. I'd do things. It's always been my go-to tool for anything. I think it shifted away into Lightroom because Lightroom is a great library management system as well and has a lot of the features that Photoshop has for photo work, you know, for color balancing, things of that nature. But Photoshop's always been on my machines, and I've either had a version that I bought at one point or got a free version, or when I worked at the university, I had it because I was in education, which is really cool. But here at Netflix, I get it because it's a very useful tool for me when working with designers and stuff. I've used it multiple times. But Adobe's changed their process, right? When you can either buy a piece of software, but really they don't recommend that. They want you to buy a license of it. And so the deal that I got recently is I bought the suite. I actually have access to the entire Adobe suite, which means that I was able to download and have fun the other day with all the iOS apps that they have. I would say that the downside of what they've got is that it's just kind of a mishmash and it's hard to keep track of all the things. Adobe's always been kind of like this. They keep on making really awesome apps, but if you don't really have a direct need, it's hard to know what they are. And then sometimes they'll have the app and it'll be available, but it hasn't been worked on for a while. I mean, total wins, of course, is Illustrator, Photoshop, and InDesign. Amazing applications. But there are a whole bunch of other apps that are out there that are used that don't have the kind of longevity. But I do find that all the editing I use Adobe Audition, and I've updated the most recent one now that I've got the CS. I'm using Lightroom, of course, I have for years, and I love that. And some of these apps are pretty cool. One of the apps that I found that I just kind of fallen in love with, and I haven't really used it much, is called Adobe Capture. Now, I don't know how easy it is to use if you don't have an Adobe app, license or whatever, but Adobe Capture on iOS allows you to use your camera to capture art stuff. So you can take a picture of a space of something, or bring your camera up, get the camera viewing the scene, if you will, and it will select a whole bunch of colors from that scene. So it's an easy way to make a swatch kit. So let's say you really want to use the thematic colors of something you've seen. You take out your camera, you take a picture of it, and you can get the samples, if you will, of colors from that photo, the 12 or 6 colors, and that becomes a swatch that's then part of your Adobe Cloud. And then later in something else like Photoshop on your desktop, you could open that swatch up and actually use it. Pretty awesome. It also has a vector capture system. So let's say you see something like someone's, maybe your own drawing, I've used this a lot, or some kind of black and white thing in the world. You take a picture of it and move your scale up and down until you get kind of what you want, erase some noise, and then you have a vector of that same image. So it's a really fast way to make a vector of something, which is awesome. And it also has a few other aspects. Those are the two that I've used the most. Oh, texture. You can also like take a picture of like a wood grain and make it a texture, which you can then use in a 3D editing app. Like Photoshop has some 3D capabilities I haven't used much of. Anyway, kind of fun little suite. And the reason I bring all that up is that it has been said that Adobe will actually have a full Photoshop app on iOS. And I do have an iPad Pro, and I use it quite a bit. I use an app called Procreate to draw. So I'm using the Apple Pencil, and I've actually engaged in even a course on doing this. I want to learn how to use Procreate even better. It's kind of the de facto win right now for painting and drawing on the iPad. But Adobe has a few other choices, and Adobe's going to have Photoshop. And when Photoshop comes out, if it is full-featured Photoshop, I can't imagine not using that for all the drawings. Photoshop has not all the stuff that Procreate has, but it's been around for so long that there is a large collection of brushes. And as a digital artist, Photoshop's kind of the winner. And then from there, you might deviate, but it's definitely the big boy in art space digitally. So I'm looking forward to getting Photoshop on iOS and trying it out, and I will definitely let you know how I think about it. I think Procreate right now is not that expensive. I don't even know what it costs, but it is kind of a joy to use if you like to draw on things other than paper. One of the things that I think about a lot is podcasting. And I know a lot of people that are engaged in my show are also podcasters, so hello to you. The kit that I'm using right now is great. I really am enjoying it. I use a Zoom H6, which is a recorder that records onto flash media and or SD card and has four XLRs in, and I use SM58 clones, which are pretty great. But when I'm doing a two-location recording, like we've been doing on the We Are Netflix podcast a couple times, it's really challenging. I actually have two of these kits. One travels to the other office, so we've done one in Germany. We've done a couple in LA, where I stay up here. And what we're doing is we make a Skype or Hangouts call to each other, to the two different computers. The computer's output, the speaker of the computer, is going into the Zoom H6 into an audio jack. So the headphones that the people are listening to are using the Zoom H6, so you can hear your own voice, make sure your voice is close to the microphone and doesn't deviate away so it sounds too quiet. So that's important. And so you're hearing your own self on your headphones, which are your mics in the room, and then one of the inputs coming in is from your laptop, which is the phone call. So you hear them pretty well, and you hear yourself really well. And then the transmit out can't be from this Zoom H6 because the Zoom H6 does not have a mix minus. What does that mean in audio? Imagine that you are a guitarist and you're playing your guitar on stage and behind you is a drummer. And you have a monitor in front of you feeding into your ears, right? You can listen to the sound of the band. You actually need none of the drums amplified. They're behind you. You need some of the bass because you're playing guitar, lead guitar, and you need to hear the bass. And you need to hear some of the vocal so you know where you are in the song from the singer's perspective. But what you also really need to hear, actually louder than anything else, is your own instrument. Because, of course, you know, electric guitar is not amplified. So you need a mix that's not really the mix the audience is hearing. These are monitor mixes. And monitor mixes have tons of benefit. And when you have a big mixing board, a big process of the mixing board is actually feeding all the monitors. Monitors, there's different mixes for everybody. Additionally, when you're doing recording, if I'm listening to myself on a microphone, which is important, like I'm doing right now, I can hear myself pretty well, and I'm also recording myself, I want those two things to be the same. I want a good recording of what I hear. There's a meter in front of me, and I can see that the meter reading is going up, but also like, I can hear it, so I know it's good. But in this Skype situation, I want them to hear me, but I don't want them to hear themselves because there'd be this horrible delay. So I want to hear the phone call coming in, and I want to have them hear me without the phone call. And that is a mix minus the phone call, right? It's the mix that we're recording, or that's going to my headphones, minus their feed. There is no way, unfortunately, to do that to the Zoom. Now, the Zoom is recording multiple channels, right? Every microphone and the Skype call has its own channel. So later on, I just don't use that WAV file, that extra WAV file that's the Skype call at all. I just throw it away because I don't really need it except for kind of syncing things up between the two different machines. But what I would love, of course, is being able to feed that them minus themselves or us to them through the computer, which I can't do. This leads to the problem of syncing. You have two sets of WAV files, one from each system, and no master file that's recorded together. You have to kind of mix them together. For We Are Netflix, I luckily have somebody doing that work, Robert Polly, who's a colleague from KUSP and a friend and has been doing a great job of editing since I stopped doing the editing. And this problem has emerged that's pretty clear. It's kind of a pain. And the truth is, I know what kit I want. I know the hardware I want. And it's not actually that hard to build it. My out-of-school experience was at a radio broadcasting company. We made audio gear. And it's actually not that complicated a circuit to do what I want to do. But, of course, I want the flash drive to record everything. So, effectively, I want... I kind of want to make a new Zoom H6, right? I want to make a new hardware box that does XLR, that does mix minus from a computer. And when I think about that project, I think about the desire for myself to have it and how much work it would be, and I stop doing it. And yet I know that there's probably a market for this as well. So I find it kind of frustrating that I'm in a space in my life where I understand that there's a business model here. I understand that a good product could be made. I understand that there isn't one out there that I can find that really does it. There's a giant growth in podcasting. And the only thing that stops me from doing it is the time that I have to invest in other things. It's like I want a group of people that will launch a business plan that I'll help guide. You know, just sit on a board and just be like, these are the kind of things we need to do, kind of the design aspect of it, but somebody else actually building and engaging in it. That'd be awesome. I guess that's my wish for the year, is people coming to me with desires to build stuff where I can participate at some level to be helpful, but good things come of it. Maybe that's what we all want. Item 2 about podcasting. I talk too fast. I need to slow down. I'm on two minds of this. I'm getting feedback from Robert about this for the podcast, that I go too quickly. I get too excited. I go faster and I go too loud. When I slow myself down, I mean, I understand exactly why I do this. I speak quickly because I'm excited and I'm thinking fast. So I want to speak at the speed that allows me to keep thinking without slowing down. And in the world around me, the people that I engage with also speak quickly. I like fast-thinking people. But that's not an excuse for making good audio. We have software that can speed up. If you want fast podcasts, just download, get an iOS device, download Marco Ometz's Overcast app, throw that things up, speed boost up, and you'll get some great fast podcasts. That's how I listen to all my podcasts, actually, is sped up a bit. But, you know, radio is about storytelling and about engaging with people. And, of course, slowing down right now doesn't help anything because I was fast in the first half of this podcast. But I do understand that there's this art form about being good at communicating. And when I slow down intentionally, when I try to make myself understood at a more clear level, I start to bore myself. I feel like half the joy of engaging in conversation is to get excited and to get faster. So I'm in this space where I enjoy people that get their information out quickly, and I don't mind listening to things fast. In fact, I like it. And I also understand that being more popular, if you will, if you want to go with a broader audience, slowing things down a bit is quite important. And I'm not talking about an excessive level of speed slowing down. I think I'm doing an okay job of being slow right now as we're talking about this. But of course, you're thinking about it, aren't you? Because I brought it up. But part of me just wants to go as fast as I possibly can and get all the information out as quick as I can. And I'm in the split. Do I train myself to be slower? Or do I go ahead and go for it? Well, on the We Are Netflix podcast, it is for a general audience. And it is important that I slow down. So I'm taking up the skill to think about that speed and to intentionally slow down. In fact, my partner on the podcast, Michael, will actually cue me and slow me down. And sometimes the geeks on this show also slow me down. So what do you think? You like speed? You like slow it down? Let me know. Also, if you like the show, please feel free to join us on the Patreon. Got some great people giving me money every month to cover all the expenses of the show, and also to give me a little bit of money to do some advertising, which I do when enough accumulates to buy an ad. But you can either give me money through the Patreon to support the show. You can find out about that at geekspeak.org/support, or share that you like this podcast with other people. And, you know, write a review. Just give an honest opinion of what you think about the show. Give 5 stars, but then give an honest opinion about what you think of the show. And I hear that iTunes is the place to do that, which is fine, but any place you want to talk about the show, I would really appreciate the support in that way as well. GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. If you use stuff any way you'd like, just let them know the geeks made it. That's pretty fast. I'm Lyle Troxell. Today's show is me talking about a few things.